And we'll be back in a moment. We'll have open lines for you this hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Here we are in the wee hours with open lines this hour. Let's go to our first-time caller line, Joplin, Missouri. Benton, welcome to the program, Benton. Hi.
Good evening.
Yes.
Yes. Couple of things. One, I did clearly see with two other people a UFO in the hills of Arkansas, where it is extremely dark, and one was about 3 miles across, and one was about a mile across, and they hooked up together and looked like they were transporting cargo in the air. They were just floating, and after about 30 minutes, they just took off in different directions.
How did you estimate how big they were?
We were in a mountain range, and we just estimated it from the distance we were in this valley to how far away the other mountains were.
Benton, did they make any noise?
None.
That's silent. You know, we've been getting reports for years of objects like that. And if they were transporting, I don't know. I just can't believe we've got these things built and we've been hiding them. I can't believe that. Well, let's go to Oregon. John, west of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, John, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
What's up?
Is this George?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I've been trying to get a hold of you, and I got through. I can't believe I was this lucky. My dad was a highly decorated war hero, World War II.
Okay.
And he was had the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, Badge of Valor, and Purple Heart, and some other ones.
He did it all.
Yeah, and he was going to get the Congressional Medal of Honor, but when he became friends with George S. Patton, and Dad always had his own platoon and whatnot, but he got close to George, and George told him a lot of things, and because he had contact, you know, about intelligence and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, when the government killed George S. Patton because he told Dad that he feared for his life, he wanted to come back and clean house because he said there was a lot of bad things going on and he feared for us losing our country and that there was aliens involved. And my dad was a skeptic until he talked to George, but after they killed George, Dad would never vote.
There are some people believe that George Patton did not die in an accident, so you think that he was murdered, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And my dad, you know, he had a stroke, and he told me a lot of things after he had his stroke. We got pretty close, you know.
Did your dad believe that he was murdered?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He did.
Because they found out that a lot of people would vote for him, and they were afraid that he would clean house, see?
We had a program a few months ago about an author who has researched this, and he, too, believes that he was murdered, assassinated.
But what I wanted to tell you, that's where I started out with, but what I wanted to tell you was that I'm right on a flight path. We have our own private airstrip here, and we've built like over 12 different types of home builds that are STOLs, short takeoff or landing, but they go over 200 miles an hour. And anyway, we're running on a flight path, and I believe that there's a... if you were here, I could take you on a flight and show you there's a black ops. They're all over the place, but there's a black ops camp right over the mountains here in the Cascades. And there's a place called Table Rock, and I believe that there's a UFO base just on the other side over there. We have seen, my mom has seen the UFO stuff. She's 84 years old.
And you think they're ET, John, as opposed to being ours?
Well, now this is what I wanted to tell you. Now, I've seen them fly over at night, and I've seen them fly over in the daytime. And the one I've seen was flying from Table Rock, and it was a triangle shape. And I swear to God, I'll put my hand on the Bible, that sucker was at least 5 miles
Jeez.
And I could see the afterburner on it. There was a white flicker like a torch you'd light up, you know. And it was so fast that it was like Ed was saying, you had to really be on it to see it. It went by so fast, but it was cloaked. And all I could see was the afterburner. But and this one, that the last one that I seen here, my mom has never seen nothing, you know. And this one day I come out of the shop, and I come in through the gate and lock the gate, and she was sweeping the sidewalk, you know, and something compelled me. I don't know if it had this spirit come over me or what, to look up. And I looked up, and here was a UFO. It's just like Star Trek Enterprise, pure white as white could be. And I'm telling you, now, being a pilot, I know distances and altitudes. And most normal people, you grab them by the chin and pull their head up, and they would fight against it. But Mom let me pull her head up, and she looked up. I mean, I didn't have time to tell her.
Yeah, yeah.
And I put her head up like that, and she goes, UFO, you know. And this thing, George, was so big. Now, I know that it was up there high enough. It was so big, and it was going so slow that it went over straight over the top of us, and I could feel some kind of magnetic energy. In fact,
jeez,
I feel the things in my pocket, my metal things, have been magnetized.
Yeah, yeah.
And I actually felt, we both felt kind of giddy, if that would be the description. And I don't know what would cause that. But anyway, as it went over, and I wish I would have had a camera, and I could have taken some pictures and froze it. But this thing was so big that across the road from us, we have like 1,000 acres. It doesn't belong to us, but it's a grass seed area. And it would cover that whole area. I mean, it was so big, I think it could have covered the whole city of Portland.
How high up do you think it was?
I'm guessing at about probably 60,000 to 70,000 feet. But it looked like it was closer because it was so big.
Yeah.
And, you know, the bigger they are, they look like they're going slower. But it went so slow. I mean, I had time to look underneath it, and guess what it said on the bottom around the circle? I'm talking just like Star Trek Enterprise, the saucer.
Yeah, well, yeah. What did it say?
It said United States of America.
No way.
Yes. It was going so slow. I mean, I wear glasses, and my eyes aren't as good as they used to be, but I could see the right in the center on the bottom.
Why would they even put an insignia on that?
And it was going so slow. And I didn't write down the date. This was September, Indian summer, before the weather got bad. It was beautiful, clear. It was blue sky, not a cloud in the sky.
Is there a base up that way?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, it went over so slow, I could see that on the bottom. Yeah, it was United States Navy or Air Force or United States of America. I swear to God.
That is incredible. I don't know why they would even want to publicize that, but that is weird. But good story. Very good. Rick in Albuquerque, New Mexico on the wild card line. Hey, Rick.
How are you?
Good.
How are you?
Good, good, good.
Good. Well, I have two encounters with aliens to tell you about.
All right.
And it falls in. I have a friend that is in magnetic interference. He's a scientist, and he works in that. He told me, he confirmed some things for me when I told him about these two encounters that I'd never heard before, and I've heard it mentioned tonight on your program. And the first encounter happened back in 1972, and I was married, newly married.
Mm-hmm.
I was by myself. My wife had gone back to Missouri to visit family. And I got home about 10 o'clock that evening, went to bed. I heard a low vibration. Heard a low vibration, if that makes sense. That's the best I can do.
A low hum.
I'm not going to say hum. It would be close, yeah.
Yeah.
Except this thing went through you, okay? That's a perception, but it felt like it penetrated you, like it went through you. It was omnipresent or something like that. You know, it was pervasive. Anyways, I'm laying in bed, and I hear on the roof something. I'm not sure what it was. It's not like it was a little pitter-patter of feet or anything like that. The next thing that happens, and I'm not asleep. I haven't fallen asleep
right,
yet.
Right.
And I'm laying there, and all of a sudden, It was like I was being programmed. And what I saw was I saw formulas in my head. And it was just, it was like a download.
What kind of formulas?
Now listen, this was in 1972. We didn't have the images of computer
and
that type of stream.
That's
at that
true.
Point.
Not at all.
Now, what kind of formulas? I can't tell you. And I've wondered, why in the hell me all these years? Now, let's go forward about, 2006, okay?
All right.
We bought a house in Albuquerque, fixer-upper, moving from Houston, my wife and I. My kids are grown and gone. So I'm up there working on the house, tearing it apart. And I just driven up from Houston. I was dead tired. Actually, I'm doing the same drive right now. Yeah, I'm out just outside Albuquerque. Yeah, I stopped so I could have signal.
Because
this was riveting, this show tonight. And I got in. It was about 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. I went to bed. You know, took in the essentials, shut the door, went to bed.
Passed out.
Well, I had a hard time falling off because I was just so wound from, you're looking at almost 900 miles of straight through. So I'm laying there. What I had was I had a fold-up bed, roll-away bed, up against a room where we had punched a doorway through. To create a study off of what is now the master bedroom. I was laying right up against the wall. The bed was right up against the wall. My feet were right by the doorway. Now, I have had numerous times in my life this sensation when I'm asleep of being touched. It's not real comfortable, but I can't say that I've been damaged at all. But I have had hands on me. I've had some type of body next to me, not sexually or anything like that, just sitting right next to me.
You could feel the presence.
I could feel it. And coming out of that was very difficult because I'd be asleep, you know. But I would feel this, and I was trying to wake up. When I'd wake up, I was sweating, you know. It was like a nightmare, you might say. Okay, well, let's grant that that's a nightmare. Well, this time, after this trip to Albuquerque, this night in 2006, I'm not asleep yet. And I'm just laying there on my back. For whatever reason, I keep a pistol close to me. I've always been like that. Now, I'm going to tell you something that's very meaningful about that. I'm not a violent person. And God, I pray that I never have to use it.
It's protection.
It's protection, pure and simple. And I'm a good shot. I'm a very good instinctive shot. Okay, so I'm laying there with my hands knitted behind my head under the pillow. I can feel the pistol next to the back of my hand. All of a sudden, I feel a push on the bottom of my feet. Now, this time, I'm not asleep.
This is weird.
And my eyes flew open. There were two gray images at the foot of the bed. And faster than I can describe.
You don't tell me you drew the gun on them.
I drew the gun and shot. I nailed the sucker in the doorway. The taller one was in front of the doorway. And there was a little bit shorter one that was in front of me.
You shot
I
whatever this was?
Whatever it was, I drilled it. Bullet 38 right into the door frame.
Was it it went right through it?
I don't know. See, as the flash went off, you know, it's a snub nose that I had. Flash went off. You know, it's the acrid smell, the flash. Blinded by the flash. Because it was pitch black in there, and they're not there.
You know you hit it, though.
Well, if it was there, I hit it.
Well, was there a gunshot in the house afterwards? Did you see anything?
Yeah, the bullet.
It lodged.
It lodged in that doorway.
Oh.
I had my friend come over that does the magnetic interference research. I showed him because I was spooked as hell after this one.
It's very possible, Rick, that these things are dimensional and it went right through them. We're coming up on a break. We'll take Michael in Los Angeles. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi, yeah, just a couple observations. I just sound off on my disappointment over this latest stimulus package.
Uh-huh, you're not alone.
Here we are. It's by the time it gets out of the conference committee this weekend, it's over 1,000 pages that, you know, whatever the members of Congress will be asked to vote on.
Average worker will get about $13 in his paycheck.
And, you know, no one, I mean, when you get over 1,000 pages, no one really knows what's in there, and members will be voting on something that obviously they haven't read.
Absolutely,
and,
right.
And a pattern of, you know, the bill they voted on before, the bailouts with no oversight, the regulations of the financial markets melted down, had no oversight, that Bush's deficits that weren't checked. And it looks like it's more of the same. It looks like we're right back to after the last three, you know, waves of financial chaos. Here we go again. You know, here we go again.
Yeah, and so, and what's the plan next? What can they do next after this comes out and nothing happens?
And like nothing happened with the bank bailouts. And why their hurry? You'd think that after all they'd been through that they would take the time to get it right this time. And,
yep.
And I dollars for donuts, they're not going to get it right this time, and we're going to be... What do they do after this is passed? What will happen?
I have long said that we need to let the free marketplace solve its own dilemma, do away with the IRS, put money back in the hands of Americans, go to a use tax. That way we tax the billions and maybe trillions of dollars of illicit drug money that is flowing into this country, because that's being used to buy goods and services. At least it'll get taxed this way. It's not being declared. And start, you know, letting Americans spend the money they want to spend on things. They would.
Well, you know, as long as, you know, the IRS can lawfully audit us, how come our own government hasn't been audited, whether it be their financial reports, which is all of their budgets, not just the
two
buckets?
Well, you know why. You know why they haven't been audited. They just, they're above it.
When it comes to those big people, you know, it's all red ink is okay. But when it comes to ordinary people, it's a matter of vault cash, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? I want this to succeed, and I want this president to succeed. I just don't think this stimulus package will work. That's my guess, and you feel the same way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we shall see.
Yeah, and I look forward to your coverage of it. You do outstanding coverage. I can't miss it.
We were way ahead of the curve on this one, weren't we?
I can't turn it off.
I know, me either. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
We're coming up to this break, and then we'll come back for more open lines this day. You know, we've changed the format of the show tonight because of the tragedy near Buffalo, where this Continental Airlines commuter train crashed, killing 48 people in that plane and one on the ground. Very sad story. And so we flexed the show a little bit. I'll be back in a moment. More open lines on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, guess what? Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th, open lines. Oh, anything can happen. Back with more of your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, back to the calls. Let's go to British Columbia in Canada. Lorian on the International 9. Hi, Lorian.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going well.
It's nice. Lori.
Lorianne,
actually. Anyways, I wanted to ask you about those two satellites that crashed.
Strange story, wasn't it?
Yes. Like, my question is, do you think that could have been, like, ships? Because we're talking about fighting and everything.
Well, you know, I don't know. It could have been, but I think they were satellites. You know, Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor, head of the EnterpriseMission.com, he thinks there's something else going on up there. He really does. But the official word was that a defunct Russian satellite smashed into a private satellite from this country and pieces everywhere. What do you think?
I don't know. I think it's kind of fishy in a way, especially after listening tonight to
yeah.
the show.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's a good point. We're not done looking into that story either.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Lorianne.
Thank Thank you.
All right, let's go to Alex in New Jersey. Welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi, Alex.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Good, thanks.
George, I'm calling. I'd like to share with yourself and all the listeners what I believe is a solution, the remedy to this entire economic chaos, recession, whatever you want to
say. I wish somebody would have the answer.
Well, all I ask is kindly, listeners throughout the United States and internationally, lend me your ears, please, for 2-3 minutes the most.
2 minutes I'll give you.
Thank you, George.
Okay.
Here I go. Everybody knows, everybody heard that Congress approved not too long ago $700 billion. Now, last we heard was half of that money, in other words, $350 billion, is gone. Half of it went to save the banks and the insurance companies, so they have $350 billion left. I say to fix this problem for everybody, all you need is $1 billion, and they can keep the other $349 billion for themselves. All right, now that we have this $1 billion, all we need to do is look up what the population of the United States was, according to the Department of U.S. Census, as of 9 years ago now. And that figure was a little more than 281 million people. Now, I say, out of this $1 billion, what's wrong with giving each one of those 281 million people $1 million each? And that'll leave us with a leftover of $700 million out of that $1 billion.
Does that math work? I don't think that math works. Hold on. I'm going to try to check that. 200, let's say you say there are 200 million people, and that's into 1 billion. I think that is 8. No, that only ends up being about $5 a person. So that's not going to cut it. That's not going to cut it at all. Hey, by the way, we think... You might remember a story I'm going to play very quickly. Art Bell's incredible interview with a guy named Mel Waters, this incredible hole in the planet. I think we found Mel Waters. He sent us an email that was the same email address as during this last interview.
Now to Eastern Washington. I guess this is Eastern Washington. Mel, are you there?
Yes, I am.
First of all, Mel, thank you for answering. What are you doing up at this time of the morning?
Well, after I sent the fax, I'm living in town here now because we had a couple of our buildings out there cave in after the big snows that we had out here last month.
Oh, yes.
And so thereby goes some of the construction debris into the hole. So,
all right. When did you discover this hole?
Well, the hole has always been there. We've been out there for a couple of years now, and you know, the hole has been there since we've been there. It's been there since the previous owner was there, and the previous owner there was quite elderly, and I'd say he was there for a good 30, 40 years before we moved in.
Wow.
And then
and so there's been a thing of throwing stuff down this hole for a long time.
Oh, yeah, it's been going on, you know, for as long as the hole has been there, I assume.
When nobody knows that, I guess. All right, how do you pronounce the name of your town, Manistash?
Manistash.
Manistash, right. That's right. Thank you.
Actually, I'm in, right now, I'm in a little town called Ellensburg.
Oh, I know Ellensburg. All right.
You must know about a rodeo here then.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well, so, yeah, we've been there for several years. And, you know, we just take all, you know, we take all of our trash, rubbish, anything we have that we have to get rid of, we take it, throw it in the hole. Everyone's throwing their stuff in the hole. The people from around there throw all the stuff in the hole. I mean, it's just been going on for a long time. Well, I got this thinking one day, how come this hole is not filling up? It must be an awfully deep hole.
That's a good thing to consider, sure, as you throw stuff in it for decades, literally.
And so, you know, I used to be a, I would say pretty close to a professional shark fisherman. So I had a couple of huge fishing reels, went out there and started letting the line down. I figure after one...
Did you weight the line?
Oh, yeah. There's in fact, the original line is still down there. I have just been adding to the line and keeping track of how much line I have used. So I've not reeled it in.
How much weight is on it?
There's a one-pound weight at the bottom of it.
One-pound weight, all right.
One-pound weight. It's a triangular one-pound weight.
Okay.
And so that's at the bottom of it at first.
So in other words, it would go down kind of like a plumb bob.
Exactly, exactly. In fact, I have it rigged across the center of it there, and it goes, you know, goes straight down from the center there. And occasionally I try to move the line there, but when you're moving that much line, you really can't do a whole lot with it. But it seems to, you know, there seems to be, it's not resting again against anything at this point here, and it continues to go down freely. And so when I was out there earlier, I let out a little bit more line. And
so you actually went out there tonight after I read this?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, man.
Well, you know, it's not too bad out here right now. It's in the about 25 degrees, so it's not too cold.
Have you ever heard anything coming from any sounds or anything?
Well, you know, I mean, the normal thing to do is kind of like yell into it there, to, you know, to see an echo. And I've never heard an echo come out of that thing.
No echo.
At all. You know, that's one of the first things I noticed about it. As usual, I brought the dogs with me. They wouldn't go anywhere near the damn thing. And I went back to the Suburban and hung out over there. So it was kind of, if I try to bring them there on a leash, they'll just dig their feet in. They do not want to go anywhere near the hole. And so that's, I don't know. It's just,
well, you've got miles and miles of.
I'm measuring it by feet. You know, I convert feet to yards, so I don't know how many miles that is. I assume it's a fair number of miles, though.
Well, 5,280 feet is a mile, so you really think you've got 80,000?
Yes, yeah, I get line in 5,000-yard spools, and so I've gone through that many.
Well, you have got a hole, then, that goes... Well, you know, you can't say to the center of the earth, but you've got a hole that goes miles and miles and miles into the earth. I would think a university would be out there, boom, just like that.
Well, my wife does work for a local university here, and, you know, we've been talking to them about it. And one of the things is they find it quite incredible that I've let that much line into the ground, but that's what I've been doing.
Have you ever thought of winding it all back up again?
Well, when I let out the first 1,500 yards of line, I reeled all of that back in.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know if I had hit water down there, because I thought that's a lot of feet.
You bet.
You know, that's 4,500 feet of line. Did I hit water? So what I did is I sent down a roll of lifesavers.
Lifesavers?
Yeah, so when it hits the water, the lifesavers will dissolve.
That's true. Oh, I see. So very smart. So
yeah, it's an old shark fisherman's trick there. We used to send our bait out on a balloon attached to a roll of lifesavers, and the bait would go out into the ocean on the tide.
Yeah.
And then eventually the lifesavers would melt, and the bait would fall to the bottom. You know, you couldn't cast a big old mackerel out there that far. So
that's amazing. So, what do you? You got any guesses?
I don't. I have no idea. I thought it could have been. I could have been a mine shaft. But the thing about it is the surface part of it's been very well cared for. I mean, someone built a very lovely wall around it. And
all right, tell me about the nature of the side of the walls. In other words, you must be able to look down far enough at least to examine the side of the walls.
Sure. It's stone for about 15 feet down.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's soil, dirt, and then, you know, further down, rock. You know, so, but I can only see to the extent of, really powerful flashlight. I brought halogen lights out there to try to get a better look down there, but the visibility really isn't there. You cannot see much after a while. But it's a retaining wall. I'd say it's about a 3.5 foot retaining wall, and it goes down about 15 feet, and then it's...
Well, I'll tell you this much. No matter how powerful a light, and I was even thinking about a laser... when you're talking about 80,000 feet, forget it.
Well, I they should have some technology that can give me an idea of how deep this thing is. I mean, obviously, the old fishing line method is only going to go so far.
What we need here is a volunteer. Real, I'm serious. Somebody who would be willing to be lowered into this hole.
I don't. You know, to be honest with you, I don't even know if there's any air down that far. I mean,
I wouldn't know about that either.
Or,
yeah, that's
true. What kind of pressures we're dealing with. These are things that, you know, are totally beyond my my grasp in terms of, you know, knowledge about these things. But
do you own this property?
It's our property, yeah.
Uh-huh. How long have you been working on this?
Well, we've been out there for a couple of years, I said about 4 years now. But this project here with letting down a line, that's only been since last summer here. And it was just,
last summer.
I said, well, how come this thing isn't filling up?
Well, sure.
And, I talked to the neighbors around there, you know, which are, you know, you know, when you're out there in the country, your neighbors are pretty far away, but they all know the hole out there.
They all know about it. So it's
because they all bring their trash out there.
So the local legend of the hole.
Yeah, this could be an apocryphal story, but one guy claims that he threw his departed canine down into the hole.
Oh, really?
And the story is the guy that did it swears the dog actually came back to him. And he was
really?
He was a hunter. The story is that he was a hunter, and he was out there hunting, and he saw the same dog. He had the same collar. He had the same little, little metal thing on his collar there. And he said it was the same dog. And he says he knew he threw the dog into the hole.
And well,
that's not my dog. That's not my.
It's not your story, but it's a story of a resurrected dog.
Yeah. This is, as you can well imagine, this is all Native American land around here. And
so one of the lines
of inquiries I'd like to make is, you know, is there anything about this hole in regards to the Native Americans? That's something I haven't really pursued right now. But
if you had a fatal disease, Mel,
yeah,
would you jump in the hole?
I would.
You would?
Just based on the dog story? It is in my will.
What?
Should I meet my demise? That
you would be thrown in the hole?
Disposed of into the well.
I'm not sure the health department would allow that.
Well, one of the things that I thought about later on was, what if this is like contaminating our water, you know? And, I'm sure you do this out there in Pahrump, too.
Well, no
person. Water checked all the time.
Well, yeah, no personal offense to you, Mel, but if there was a possible contamination problem, I'm sure you're a clean guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you deteriorated, you would possibly produce E. coli or something horrible in the local water supply.
Well, again, so far it hasn't.
If you weren't resurrected.
I mean, the water around that area is absolutely pure water. It is,
And so nothing thrown down, all the old junk and trash, and nothing has polluted the water.
No, I can't speak for everything that's been thrown down there, but none of that has been showing up in the water that people draw from their wells. I mean, you know, the water's as clean as it's ever been out there. I think we get water that comes off the Cascades or something.
Yeah.
It's just really great. It's really wonderful water.
Mel, you wouldn't be pulling my leg.
No, I'm not. And one of the reasons that I went out to the property tonight, other than it just, you know, it's something that weighs heavily on my mind. I was afraid that after I sent the facts out, that there would be people around there because it's...
Well, there may be, but we have not identified specifically where it is.
Well, there aren't, as far as I could tell, too many big holes like that around. And so at least the people in my neck of the woods are familiar with it. And, I kind of almost expected to see a small party of people.
Well, there may be. Now, I mean, you know, come daylight, there may be. But remember, folks, this is private property. This is Mel's home.
It is posted, too.
Oh, it is. All right. There you are. So without knowing exactly where it is, I wouldn't look for that to occur. But there is going to be substantial curiosity about it now, Mel.
Well, I think I've, let you know as much as I know about it. I certainly want to find out more. I was mostly curious about the depth of it. I mean, how deep is the deepest hole anyone has ever found?
Well, I've never heard of anything deeper than this.
You know, I thought maybe this would be like Guinness World Book of Records type hole here. As far as things I thought it would be like, could have been like an old mine.
Well, now here's a couple things to think about. I've heard as you go down into the earth, Mel, that it gets hotter.
Ooh.
Right? So
yes.
You would think that your fishing line with a weight on it at some point would melt or, you know, something. But there's still weight on it, huh?
Yeah.
God, that's
amazing. The line is not moving freely. I mean, you know, it still falls under its own weight.
Oh, that's amazing. Let's let some of the audience ask you questions.
Okay, I think I can do that.
All right, because I just might be missing something. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Dave in Milwaukee.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, I was listening to this. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I just wanted to let you know, I looked up an encyclopedia, and the Marianas Trench, which is the deepest hole we know about.
That's in the ocean, right?
Right. It's 36,000 feet deep.
So this is... certainly over double that already.
Right. And it also says, under mining, that with current technology, we can only go down about 1,600 feet.
Wow.
That's great. That is great.
So you've got something here that already qualifies for Guinness.
That is wonderful. I like that. That's great. Did you said 1,600 feet?
That's what they said, yeah. 1,640 feet, it says, with current technology is about
as deep.
All right. Thank you very much for that information. So already we now learn that you may have a Guinness qualifying hole there, no question about it.
And we may have found Mel. And if we indeed have found him, we'll get him on the program. For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.